Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Graceful Atheist Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. I want to thank my latest reviewers on the Apple Podcast Store, A.B. Potts and Siobhan Bear. Thank you so much for the kind words. You too can rate and review the podcast on the Apple Podcast Store. You can rate the podcast on Spotify and subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening. Please consider joining the Deconversion Anonymous Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/deconversion. Special thanks to Mike T for editing today's show. On to today's show. My guest today is Doug Traversa. Doug grew up the child of a military father, and his mother took him to various churches and chaplains over the years. He says he started to get serious about his eternal destiny when he was 12 years old and began to ask very difficult questions of his Lutheran pastor. He never felt satisfied with those answers until a group came along and seemed to give him definitive answers to eternity and how he could know he was going to heaven. Things began to break down in his later years, and eventually he called himself an atheist. Doug himself went into the military, and he describes in this conversation an atheist in a foxhole experience where he remained an atheist. But what's really interesting about Doug's story is that he then came back from the Air Force and sought a fellowship as a Unitarian Universalist minister as an atheist. He was an out and open atheist, and I find that just deeply fascinating, and I think you will too. Here is Doug Traversa to tell his story. Doug, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you reached out to me and told me that you have a little bit of more unique story to tell. So similar in the process of having faith and going through a deconstruction process, but then after that, going into ministry as an atheist. So I'm really excited to have you on and hear your story.
Well, I'm happy to share it. I saw that you were looking for volunteers to share stories, and I said, absolutely. We'll see if he'll take it.
Fantastic. So as you rightly pointed out, we're going to start at the beginning, and would like to hear what your faith tradition was like when you were young.
Well, I grew up as an Air Force brat. My father was in the Air Force for 20 years, as was I, in fact. And we moved around all the time and never had what you could consider a steady church attendance when I was young. Sometimes we went to the base chapel, but I can barely even remember any times we went. I'm sure we went, but it just left zero impact in my early years all through elementary school. My mother came out of a more conservative Christian mindset, and my father was a Roman Catholic by birth, but they didn't really practice very much.
Okay.
And it was always odd that they ended up together. She being more, I guess she had sort of left the conservative side of her faith for a while and fell in love. And so there were some tensions because he just had no interest at all.
Okay. Yeah.
In going to church or anything like that. And that all changed when I was in junior high school. We were living in Virginia at the time. He was stationed at the Pentagon, and we were in Fairfax, and there was a more progressive liberal Lutheran church there. I still remember the name, King of Kings Lutheran Church, and I believe it still exists today. Mm-hmm. At the time, we met in an elementary school, and I really liked the pastor. He was a very nice guy, but at this point in my life, I had started to decide I need to get serious about heaven and hell. I just have no, people talk about it all the time. I have no idea what's going to happen to me when I die. I haven't gotten any authoritative guidance whatsoever. And told the pastor I was interested in getting baptized. And they, my parents actually had him come over to the house and we talked about it. Problem was, he didn't have strong authoritative answers. You know, like I asked him, do you have to be baptized to go to heaven? And he gave me several different views, essentially. And to the question of how do I get to know that I'm not going to hell? Because that worried
me. Yeah.
And he really couldn't give a good answer. He suggested I come to confirmation class. He said he could baptize me there and then, since they do it by sprinkling if I wanted. And I said, okay, I'll go to the confirmation class. But that was mostly a miserable experience. A couple kids in there were really just delighting and tormenting me for no apparent reason. And I finally told my parents, if they do it again, I'm turning around and coming home because I'm on my bike. And that's the end of it. And it was. They I walked in the door and they started up and I left and never went back. And it wasn't much longer after that that my mother had hooked up with a independent Bible church called Faith Bible Church in Reston, Virginia, I believe. And they had a couple people come out on visitation to talk to us. And they were talking to my parents, but I was in the background listening. And it was just like a night and day difference from poor Pastor Ridenour, who, although I accuse him of being wishy-washy, was actually far more honest in hindsight.
Right. Yeah.
He didn't say things he didn't know to be true as truth.
Right.
So these guys gave the standard gospel. Ask Christ to be your savior. You can be saved. You'll know you're going to heaven. Once saved, always saved. You don't need to worry anymore. And it's like, wow, here's some people who know the answers.
Yeah.
So I, that night alone in my room, I prayed and asked Christ to be my savior. And shortly thereafter, we started attending that church. And that was a serious commitment because it was about 30 minutes away from us. And we went faithfully. And this was a church unlike any I'd ever been in because people brought their own Bibles to church. That never happened.
Yes, right.
And the sermons would go through a book of the Bible. So you might have a study in Romans that would go on for 2 years, and they'd literally go through verse by verse and study it in great depth.
Right, okay.
So I thought this was cool. Like, wow, here's the Word of God, and they're studying it really seriously, and they had this monstrous tape ministry, so you could listen to cassette tapes, and I did that. And I was all in. Now, my wife has said that I have a fanatic personality. And when I get into something, I get all in. And it makes sense if your eternal life is, you know, on the line, or you're doing God's will, you might as well be all in. Why be wishy-washy? So we really loved that church. Unfortunately, my dad got transferred again. We went down to Florida, Tampa Bay area, and started all over. Now, finding new churches is really tough when you have one that you loved.
Yeah.
And it took us a while. We finally hooked up with one in Tampa, which was about 45 minutes away. And they started another church in our area, which we really enjoyed. And now I'm in high school. And I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. And pretty much knew I was going to be serving the Lord somehow. I figured I'd be a missionary, planned to go to Bible college, just wanted to get high school over with so I could get on to the real schooling, the
right.
good yeah. Bible college schooling. And I was not in a Christian school ever. I was not into wearing uniforms and all that stuff. I still had an independent streak. So, and you know, they often said, if you go to a public school, it's going to drag you down. It didn't drag me down. Out of public school, went off to Christian college for 4 years. I graduated from Clearwater Christian College in Clearwater, Florida, which is near Tampa. It closed a few years ago.
Okay.
And this school was super conservative. Are you familiar with Bob Jones?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Some of the instructors came from Bob Jones. They wanted to be like Bob Jones and virtually all respects, except for the racism. They never bought into the racism.
They had that going for them. Yeah.
and you could hold hands. Men and women could hold hands, which you couldn't do at Bob Jones.
So scandalous.
We were just wild radicals in that respect. But there was a huge statement of faith to go there. You know, you had to believe the Bible was the inerrant word of God. And this was a very, very strict form of view. They called themselves separatists. So we had a course we had to take called ecumenism, and it was about the evils of the ecumenical movement.
Oh, no.
And okay. So there were all broad swaths of Christianity that weren't really Christian. You know, they thought they were, but they really weren't. So people who went to my school generally came from independent Baptist churches, independent Bible churches. You know, the Southern Baptists were a little too liberal for us.
I see. So, okay. Yeah.
And perhaps the most amusing story coming out of there is we were not allowed to have guitars because guitars were associated with rock bands and that's the devil's music, yada, yada. And I had a friend who played the banjo and they said he could do the banjo in a chapel, but the music director had to get up first and explain why a banjo was okay, but a guitar wasn't. And I thought, man, we are splitting hairs now.
Yes.
Younger people out there may not remember a day when fundamentalist Christians measured their spirituality by whether you went to movie theaters or not. Mm. So we could not go to movies. We could not watch TV except for sporting events or the news. You couldn't have a TV in your dorm room. There was one central TV that could only show certain things.
Yeah.
Despite what sounds like a really crazy, hellish experience with all these rules, I loved going there and the people were super nice. And I never encountered a staff member who I would consider to be hypocritical. Mm-hmm. They believed what they said and they lived what they said. And they certainly weren't in it for the money because they scraped by year after year. So just nice people doing what they thought was God's will.
I have a very similar story. Like my Bible college experience was bittersweet in that I loved the professors. I loved talking with my fellow students, you know, about theology, and we'd stay up late and just talking. And so I have very fond memories about all of that.
Yeah, I would love to say we had deep theological discussions, but that was one of the things I saw, that a lot of the students weren't there for the reasons I was there.
Okay.
Either their parents would allow them to go there and pay for their schooling if they went there.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they'd lived it their whole lives. Unlike me, who made a conscious decision to follow this path, you know, many of them were raised in it from the beginning and it, you know, it hadn't been a serious choice for them. I met my wife there. And her parents were both Bob Jones graduates, although really did not exhibit that sort of mindset in their day-to-day lives that you might expect.
Okay.
And also decided I'd become an English teacher. I was trying to figure out how to do God's will and do something I enjoyed too. And I really enjoyed the literature courses there. I loved my lit teacher. And decided I'd be a Christian school teacher, which I did do for 4 years at the school, which was also the school of my church that I went to, Lakeside Community Chapel, which, again, still exists and still thrives as far as I can tell. However, I enjoyed it, but it didn't pay well. We were literally below the poverty wage. If I did not have $400 in the bank, that was my dad's money that he put in there so my little bit of savings could accrue interest, I would have qualified for food stamps. And after 4 years, my wife said, enough, you either got to go teach somewhere where they pay you better. And I did look at least at one school that did, or get another job. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have an English degree, there's not a lot of jobs out there. But the Air Force said, we don't care what your degree's in, as long as it's an accredited school, we're going to teach you what we need to teach you. We just want to know you got through college.
Okay.
And my wife and I, who were both military brats, her dad was Army, swore we'd never do this to our kids. turned around and did it to our kids. Okay. It's the only thing that was out there. So I joined the Air Force, and we began that nomadic life over the next 20 years of moving a lot. Mm-hmm. And I was still a strong Christian at this point, and probably undercut some of my chances for things like officer of the quarter. I remember being asked the question, do you think women should serve in combat areas? And of course, I had to go full Bible on them. So the chaplain who was on the board thought it was great, but no one else did.
Yeah, got it.
So I was involved in Officer Christian Fellowship. We had Bible study once a week in the evenings in our house with a few couples. And again, good memories, good friends. Ironically, one of the couples from that, and this is 25 years ago, give or take, ended up moving to the same town I'm in, and we met, and immediately the wife started asking me about my faith, and I tried to explain that I don't believe what I used to believe. I don't believe in God that way, trying to be polite, and she just looked at me and said, oh, you're just confused. I just turned around and tried not to blow up.
Yeah.
So it was in the Air Force about halfway through my tour, 10 years, give or take. I was in one of the more stressful times of my Air Force career, other than when I deployed to Afghanistan. I was at the Air Force Institute of Technology getting a master's degree, and that was my job. I went to school as my job. They moved me there for 15 months and my family, and I was going to major in acquisition logistics management. Now, I'm an English major. I had no math in college. I tested out of it. And the first thing they had to do for people like me was give us a refresher of math. Mm-hmm. In fact, I had to take a night course of college algebra before I could even go to this school. And I did do that. And so for 15 months, my head was spinning. We were doing statistics. The math problems just had a bunch of Greek letters in them. We numbers.
Yes.
And it was just brutal. It was almost every waking moment was working on school, because they figure, well, we're paying you to do this. This is your job. So we're going to make it hurt. And they did.
Yeah.
So while I'm there, and through our faith journey, we had gotten more and more conservative probably, and then gone Calvinist. I was all into Calvinism at that point. And we were actually attending a Orthodox Presbyterian church, which is super strict and conservative.
Okay.
The other sort that will excommunicate you if you leave the church.
Okay.
And we never joined, so I never got excommunicated. But at this point, I started reading some skeptical literature. I actually enjoyed reading about things like Bigfoot and UFOs. So I would read like Skeptic Magazine or Skeptical Inquirer. But those magazines always took digs at religion also. And I shrugged those off because I like the other stuff. But they also started getting me thinking. Mm. So I actually got a book called The Transcendental Temptation by Kurtz, I believe. And it was a more thorough analysis of why people are into these various religions, and started pointing out flaws. And so at this point, I'm reading this without even my wife knowing what I'm really reading.
Right.
It's not like she's going through it and checking it out, but I read a few more. I got a hold of the Encyclopedia of Biblical Errancy, which is out of print now, but it's a great, massive book of every contradiction or historical inaccuracy in the Bible.
Right.
And so I was reading through that. And finally, one day, my wife figured out something was bugging me, and I just said, you know, I'm really having trouble believing this anymore. And I was really, really worried about how she was going to react. But amazingly, she said, well, you know, I have my doubts too. We don't have to just throw it out right away. Why don't we try going to some different churches, more liberal churches, see if we can find something that makes sense. And that's exactly what we did. The next church we went to, which was more of an independent Bible church, I actually had a good discussion with the Sunday school teacher. And unfortunately, his answer to my questions was, A, you just have to have faith, and B, here's a little book on Pascal's wager. So you can try to convince yourself to believe this.
Right, right.
So naturally, that didn't go over real well. Then I got transferred, went to a couple more churches. One had a female minister, and I asked her, what do you do with all these verses in the Bible that trash women and say, you're not even allowed to talk in church? And she didn't have a good answer either. And we finally said, well, let's forget this. And we stopped going. And Sunday mornings were just to relax around the house or go out and get bagels sort of day. It was odd trying to explain to my kids how everything I've taught you I don't believe anymore. But really, on the whole, they took it pretty well. They were still fairly young. And we didn't really miss it. And life went on until I got here to Arnold Air Force Base in Tennessee, my last assignment. And even at this point, there was really no interest in going to church or anything, but then I deployed for a year to Afghanistan.
Okay.
And that was my atheist in a foxhole moment. Mm.
It's interesting to hear how your family responded. Mm-hmm. Would you say that your wife was on a similar journey as well and just kind of a parallel process there?
She will absolutely admit that church for her was as much social as it was theological.
Yeah.
She was always concerned that she wasn't saved enough, that she might go to hell. I wasn't. I had gotten over that. But that was something she dealt with throughout her Christian life.
Yeah,
she was perfectly happy to dig in deeper and explore other options and look at the flaws and stuff in Christianity. So it wasn't really that big a leap for her. I've heard many stories of people whose wives still believe but stay with them, and you know, they get along and kept the marriage working, but there's that stress still. We don't have that. We've done the journey together and mostly see things eye to eye. So I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. And a topic I think we'll return to is, you know, I think that the secular aspect of church, the community, the getting together and having potlucks and all of that social aspect is what we crave as human beings. And that, so, it, you know, it's just your wife is more honest about that. That's what she was, yeah. Was more important to her. So, yeah. So I do want to hear the atheist in a foxhole story, though.
So I got deployed for a year to Afghanistan. I was a logistics officer, so we were backfilling an army unit. The army had been stretched too thin, so they took about a little over 100 Air Force logistics personnel and put them in an army position in Kabul, Afghanistan, on what used to be a Russian transportation base. Imagine just a giant sea of tan, ugly plywood huts. That's okay. Where we lived. Okay. At least we weren't in tents.
Yeah.
But they were called bee huts. And I lived in there with four other captains and a couple majors on the other side. We had a divider down between the two. And for that year, every day, pretty much, we would get on our body armor, get our weapons, get in Toyotas, which were not armored, drive across Kabul to an Afghan logistics base where we would help them stand up their unit, transport goods around the country, etc. So while many people in war zones get to drive around in Humvees or armored vehicles or something like that, we did not. Mm. And so a guy with a suicide bomb strapped to his vest could blow up our vehicle, and indeed, that happened while we were there.
I'm sorry.
And after we left. So we were pretty vulnerable and more than a little nervous. And we got there in the summer, and every day they would give you a road threat, and it was color coded. And if the roads were red or black, black was really bad. Like, we know there's going to be a bombing somewhere. Red was high threat. yellow and green, we went out. Red, we stayed home.
Okay.
But the night before, the day before 9/11, the anniversary of 9/11, the roads were red, and our commander said, we're going anyway. And people just went nuts.
I came
into the hut, and one of my buddies in there said, told me what was going on. The roads are red and we're going anyway. You know, commander doesn't care anymore. We're just going to go out no matter what. And he says, the guys are writing their death letters.
Their death letters.
He goes, yeah, if they die. I always choke up at this point.
I can imagine.
So, at that point, a lot of us were convinced, at least some of us were going to die. And I was thoroughly convinced in my mind at that point that this is my last full day on Earth. We're going to go out tomorrow and there's going to be bombings and that's it.
Wow.
And I remember I did not write a death letter. I did go out. We had a running track / soccer field, which was really all solid dirt and rock, and was also worked as the helicopter landing pad. So I went out that night and walked around on the track and just thought about things.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, gotta go. Nothing you can do about it. We'll see what happens. At no point did I pray, acknowledge God, feel slightly drawn to God, or anything else. I was done with that. You know, we can get into the theological reasons I left the faith later if you like, but at this point I was perfectly good with there is no God and I might die tomorrow and we'll just see what happens.
Right.
And I'm happy to say, obviously, I didn't die, and indeed no one in my unit died. The roads were pretty much red every day after that. We never saw yellow or green roads again. And that was our life. Now, at that point, you either accept it. You know, I love the Klingon phrase, Klingons from Star Trek. It's a good day to die. That's just sort of how you approached it. Okay.
Yeah.
We're heading out. We'll see what happens. And then I had this little ritual when we came back in the gate. Everyone had to get out of their vehicles, go over to what are called clearing barrels. They're giant barrels filled with sand. And you would clear your weapon, stick the barrel in the barrel, and pull the trigger after you had cleared it, just to make sure you don't have a round in your weapon.
Right.
And after we had cleared our weapons, got back in the vehicles, I'd say to whoever was there with me, it's a wonderful day. And they understood, they'd agree or whatever. That was the ritual. We had made it back. One more day down. What a wonderful day. We didn't get killed.
I do want to just say here that I didn't serve in the military. I have good friends who have been in the military. And actually, an indelible memory of mine, ironically, is in the 90s after Desert Storm, whilst I was still a Christian, talking to some young men who had just come back. And, you know, the popular conception of Desert Storm was it was, you know, a rough weekend, you know, but like I could see the impact on these guys, like how intense that was. So I just want to acknowledge that what you had to go through is unimaginable for most of us. And I can't imagine what it would be like to not be certain you're going to make it through the next day, day after day after day.
Yeah. I also want to add two more things about this. First of all, my two sons are in the military. Were in the military. One's a Marine, one's in the Army. They both served in Afghanistan also. So I fought in a war that my boys fought in.
Wow.
Think about that. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then shortly after I got back home, I was sitting at the table with my daughter and a car backfired outside. And I was about ready to jump under the table. And she said, relax, Dad, because, you know, it sounds like a car bomb going off.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't think I really had any PTSD. It was really hard to adjust being home. And there were two things that helped me adjust. I had been doing dog rescue where I'd foster dogs, take them in, and then find homes for them through a couple of rescue groups. And when I got back, a couple months after, if it was that long, I ended up taking in five puppies who their mother was missing. They had no idea. They found these five puppies. And I bottle fed them and took care of them. And when you're taking care of something else, you're not worrying about yourself. And those little puppies were just very therapeutic.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I looked in the newspaper and they had little announcements. And one was from the Unitarian Universalist Church in town. And the guy was speaking on Hitchens' book, God is Not Great. And I said to my wife, I don't think this is going to be a critique of the book. I know these people are really left-wing religiously. It's probably going to be speaking in favor. And I like Christopher Hitchens enough that I am willing to step foot in a church again.
Oh, wow.
She said, that sounds like fun. I've always missed the social part of church. And I said, well, let's go see what these people are like. It's a very small building. I've driven past it many times. It's a converted house on one of the main streets around here. And there may be not even 20 people in there, but it was so different from any other church service. And sure enough, the people just took turns doing sermons. They didn't have a minister. And yeah, he talked about Hitchens' book and people were thrilled to have us visit. And 2 weeks later, I was telling my story about Afghanistan from the pulpit for their sermon.
Yeah.
And so I was baffled. They had a guy who would come down a couple times a week who was sort of helping them. He wasn't a minister per se, but he was sort of functioning that way. And we'd have a discussion hour after the service. And I remember saying shortly after we had started visiting, I don't know what you all are, but you're not a church. Because yes. you don't have to believe in God. And they said, no, you don't have to believe in God. We don't care. You can be an atheist. That's fine. Lots of us are. And I said, wow, if there's a church that lets atheists come, I guess I could go to that church.
Yeah.
And after a year and a half going there, while I was still in the Air Force, I volunteered to be the lay minister once I retired.
Okay.
And used the GI Bill to go to seminary, which I did. I went for 1 year to Vanderbilt Divinity School because it was drivable, about an hour and a half. And then I switched to Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago, which is a Unitarian Universalist seminary.
Okay.
And they had a thing where you did most of it online, but you go up for a few weeks every year and do in-person stuff. And so I graduated from there with a Master of Religion. And I do, for any Unitarian Universalist out there listening, I did not get a Master of Divinity. I got a Master of Religion because while I was in the process of getting what they call fellowshipped, which is your accreditation, and I had gotten up to candidate status, the guy running it says, you know, you have to put a huge amount of work in to get fellowshipped, and you already have your church. And you're not planning to go somewhere else, are you? And I said, no. Once I'm done here, I'm done. I'm not going anywhere else. And he said, really doesn't make sense for you to go through all the fellowship process. It's a lot of time and money and effort. Just get your Master of Religion instead and do what you're doing. So technically, I don't have an MDiv, but I am ordained by my church because that's how Unitarian Universalists do it. Each congregation is independent. And they could, you know, ordain people. So they waited till I graduated and ordained me. And I did that until about 3 years ago when I did it for about 10 years. And then I retired from that. I still attend there. I still speak there occasionally and at another small church in Alabama. And that's been a really good experience. And at no point, even though I'm interested in all aspects of religion and why people believe things and still do, love reading about it just to try to understand my fellow humans, I'm still an atheist, and I'm an atheist, and people will argue about the term. Oh, no, Doug, you're an agnostic. They just can't, even in my church. And I say, here's what I mean by atheist. I have no belief in God.
Yeah.
Do I know there's not a God? No, I don't know there's not a God. No one can know that. Even Richard Dawkins says, I don't know there's not a God. I consider it highly unlikely. Most honest atheists will say, yeah, Maybe. What I don't see is evidence of a God that's interested in what I'm doing or any of us are doing. I don't see a God that intervenes. So sure, there might be a God out there. We might all be part of God. That's all speculation. I don't know. But I don't base my morality or ethics or lifestyle on trying to follow God's precepts, because God's precepts are really just some human's precepts pretending to be God's precepts.
Yes. Off mic, we were chatting and you said something I think would be interesting to unpack. What was it like then? What were the sermonettes or whatever you referred to them as, you know, were they on topics of morality, on topics of justice, on what were the kinds of topics that you would cover as a UU minister?
They're definitely not sermonettes. They're full sermons. They're longer than most of my fellow ministers. I will add that I've met for years with a couple of ministers and a youth minister from more progressive Christian churches. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of them, a Disciples of Christ church, actually let me do my internship at their church so I could then rush over to my church and act as lay minister. So I have a great relationship with them. And I know from attending their churches that my sermons tend to be longer. They can be 20 to 30 minutes. And I will talk about many different things. I will critique the Bible. I did a series called All of Genesis in One Sermon, Part One. I went through Genesis super fast in three sermons.
Okay.
And I just gave a little bit of commentary as we went along, pointing things out that were historically inaccurate or contradictory or something.
Yeah.
I will do talks on other religions. Just here's what they believe. Mm-hmm. I also have I lead Zen Buddhist services on Wednesday nights at our church. Again, because you don't have to believe anything to go there. You sit quietly. And I said, well, if Zen allows you not to have to believe all this fantastical stuff, then I'll give that a shot too. Why not? And I've enjoyed that. I think it's been super helpful.
Yeah.
And so I will talk about Buddhist stuff occasionally. I will talk about current events. I've done a couple sermons about, Afghanistan. I did a sermon on guns and why people love guns so much, because it was becoming an issue. It's a huge mm-hmm. issue down here in Tennessee. God, guns, and country. Trump 24. My neighbor's got that sign out on his yard now. God and guns. Just like Jesus was all about carrying weapons around.
Yeah.
I do like to talk about, I did one on the solar system, trying to help people understand the scale of the solar system. And I'd hold a little pinhead up and say, well, let's pretend this is the Earth and the other planets are this far away and they're this big. And I'm trying to get them to understand the vastness of the universe. And then why do we try to conceive of God as this comical character from the Bible that just gets disgruntled and envious and angry and sounds like a spoiled tyrant? If there is a God, I'll always say, if there is a God, God's beyond our understanding, beyond our comprehension, bigger than we can possibly imagine, and so different from us that we truly can't grasp it. So why do we insist on making God this human-like character from the Bible?
Yes, for sure. One of my criticisms of apologetics is that they have limited God. They've neutered God.
Oh, yeah.
They have a powerless God that they can fit in a box. And ironically, while they're trying to argue for God, they are really destroying everything that would be potentially interesting about a God, right?
Yeah, it's it's a cliche almost to say your God is too small, but it really does fit.
Yes. Yeah.
And then the other notion, of course, which Unitarians and Universalists rejected hundreds of years ago, they've been around since the birth of our country, this notion that people are going to be tortured for all eternity. you know, back in that day, they were still Christians, but they were the radical Christians. Now the mainline denominations are on board with rejecting hell, mm-hmm. and the Unitarian Universalists have gone even further left. But yeah, that was one of the biggest things for me was I wouldn't torture anybody.
Right.
Why would God? And if God would, why would you worship him? Except, well, self-preservation, sure, but he's going to know you're only doing it because you're scared to death of him. It's not like you can trick God. How can you love this being?
So maybe if we go back, you mentioned earlier that you could go over some of the theological aspects that mm-hmm. led to some doubt for you. So maybe if we talk about that. So while you were in your faith, what were some of the things that began to create doubt?
Yeah, people have often asked me, why did I leave the faith? And I said, it's because I studied the Bible.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, a few years ago, I looked in my old Bible that I had at the time, and there's a piece of paper in there where I had started jotting down reasons that the Bible made no sense, or things that I found morally repugnant. Things like how right after the Ten Commandments are given, there's a couple chapters on how slavery is going to be established. Mm. The ridiculous notion that if a man thinks his wife has cheated on him, he'll take her to the priest and will take some dirt off of the floor and mix it in the water. And if she's cheated on him, she'll miscarry and be barren. Like, wow, I'm supposed to think this came from God?
Yeah.
And I will say that it was my reading of skeptical magazines and literature that gave me the freedom to look at the Bible in a new light, but it was the actual Bible itself that condemned itself. Not to mention the contradictions. You know, you have two different creation accounts in Genesis 1 and 2. The order of creation is not even the same. The lineage of Jesus in Matthew and Luke don't match. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm used to the double talk and the tap dancing and the twisting to try to make it make sense. But if you can look at it honestly, without bias, it doesn't fit together.
I remember legitimately, like, as a believer, trying to figure out, like, what are the 12 disciples' names? Like, you know, what order things happened in? And, you know, and just being unable to get a definitive answer on something so basic that. So, yeah, just a trivial amount of critical look at the Bible begins to fall apart.
Yeah, it was things like something as important as baptism. Well, does baptism bring remission of sins or does it symbolize remission of sins? Should it be dunking or sprinkling? Believer's baptism or infant baptism? Is it necessary for salvation or just symbolic of salvation?
Yeah.
And I've just rattled off 8 different variations of serious Christian division on a very important topic. Jesus got baptized by John the Baptist, and John the Baptist was baptizing for remission of sins. So Jesus must have had sins that had to be remissionized.
Yeah.
That was one of my sermons, too.
Okay.
It's like, I went through Mark, and I said, Mark was the first gospel, and there were Christians who only used Mark. So what would Christianity be like if you only used Mark?
Mm.
And that's different, too.
Yeah, interesting.
So anyway, coming from a very strict fundamentalist Bible background, an inerrant Bible was essential. If the Bible wasn't inerrant, then you're picking and choosing and it's all garbage. And we were told this over and over in college and my churches. It all has to be God's word or you don't know which part is God's word. So as soon as I establish in my mind, beyond a reasonable doubt, the Bible contradicted itself and had errors, it came down really fast.
Yeah.
I was not interested in this opinionated Christianity. And later in life, something else I use in my sermons is what I call buffet Jesus. It's where people pick the things they like about Jesus, build a theology around the things they like, and forget about all the stuff he did and said that they don't like.
Right.
Like Jesus is all about love and loving everyone. Well, Jesus said at the end of days, he's coming back and he's judging people and lobbing them into hell for all eternity. So you think Jesus didn't say that? Or did he say that? And you're good with that? Are you, you know,
yeah.
you can't just have, unless it was tacked on by somebody, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what Jesus really said?
Yeah. Well, definitely. That's true for sure. But the point that you're making that, you know, basically all denominations cherry pick to build up their particular set of dogma.
Yeah,
they are ignoring some parts and including others or focusing on others.
Yeah. So we got rid of the inerrant Bible. And the other thing was hell. It finally got, even though I had accepted it for years, my conscience finally reared its head and said, why would you think this is okay, Doug, just because you get to go to heaven?
Yes.
In fact, I just did a sermon Sunday and I talked about the selfishness of my Christianity and I called it, at least it's not me, because yeah, other people can go to hell. At least it's not me. I get to go to heaven for all eternity and I'll embrace a religion that teaches that God tortures billions for believing the wrong thing or not even hearing the message, but at least it's not me. Oh, I look back at my past and just dismay and embarrassment.
Yeah. We talk a lot about having a little bit of self-grace about our past selves, you know, to recognize that we were in a bubble, we had an environment that was reinforcing a particular message, and that is, it actually takes a tremendous amount of self-awareness to break out of that. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm curious if you consider yourself a humanist. Does humanism have any impact on your current state?
I use labels, obviously, you know, and humanist certainly works for me. I think that's what there is.
Yes.
It's people helping people. That's what our church is about. People helping people. We're not appealing to God to help us. We help each other out. I just went over and helped a woman whose husband just died and went through all his papers trying to find the important documents and stuff. And she'd been putting it off. And I said, I'll come over and help you if you need to get it done. And she said, sure. And so that's what it's all about right there. Helping people when they have needs. So I'm definitely humanist in that sense. I can't say I've read a lot of books about humanism. It's just sort of common sense to me.
Yeah. That's a great answer.
Yeah. Okay. I've got I'm a Unitarian Universalist. I'm a Zen Buddhist. I'm a humanist. I'm an atheist, or if you insist, an agnostic, whatever. But
yeah,
I think my best answer is when we were in Germany, when we first got there, we met one of the chaplains just staying in the hotel as we were both moving in. And he said, so Doug, what are you? And I said, I'm just a guy.
Yes.
Quoting Zaphod Beeblebrox, which you'll appreciate.
Yeah. I'm just this guy. Exactly. So yeah, last topic, I did want to just talk about the aspect, you've said it there. I think that captures what I call secular grace. And that is that it is people helping people. It is connecting with one another. There is no vertical aspect to, you know, a deity. It's the horizontal connections with one another that is kind of the magic, quote unquote. And it's very much the thing that draws people to church to begin with. And it sounds like what you guys are actually doing there at your Universalist church. And well, many of the people that go through deconstruction and deconversion and ultimately walk away, that's the thing they miss is that community. So I just wondered if you want to talk about community and what that means to you.
Sure. Obviously, from what I've already said, my wife had really missed having a church community, probably more than I had. But going to a church where you are encouraged to think for yourself, to explore whatever it is that appeals to you. So You know, just because I'm an atheist there as the minister doesn't mean everyone in the congregation is. There are people who believe in God or the goddess or gods or any variation you can imagine. But where the official stance of the whole association is, a minister is free to continue to study, change, explore. There is no statement of faith that you must follow. There's ethical behavior. But you can be an atheist, you can be a Christian, you can be a Muslim, you can be a Buddhist, whatever, or anything but humanist. All of those are fine as for something that a minister would call themselves and follow and find meaning for. So to go to a place like that just blew my mind. And that's why I fell in love with it so fast.
Right.
I've also learned over many years that there's always a tendency to want to add gravitas to something or have something to establish why what you think is so vital. So sometimes it becomes politics. Sometimes it becomes social stands on various issues. So Unitarian Universalism isn't perfect. It has flaws like anything that humans have. It is very left-wing politically, but it's also very welcoming to people who are despised in so many other places. The LGBT community is fully embraced, and many of our ministers. When I went to seminary, I would guess 30 to 40% of the ministers' students there were LGBT.
Okay.
And since I had had little experience having grown up in conservative Christian churches where no one would ever admit to that, it was very eye-opening to me and it was delightful. You just learn that people are people.
Exactly.
And if a man loves a man or a woman loves a woman, they're still just as nice as anyone else, probably a bit nicer. And it's really, it becomes such a ridiculous non-issue.
Right.
And then people want to make it an issue. You come back to Tennessee and around here and it's nuts. So it's a church where you can go and be yourself. And so that's an important part of the community, helping each other when problems arise. You know, that's what I did. The biggest stuff that I did as a minister was when people were sick and in the hospital, I'd go in there and sit with them. And almost always, they just wanted to talk to me. And I didn't have to say anything. I didn't have to provide promises about the afterlife. They never asked me to pray with them. They knew where I was coming from. And I also found it very striking how at peace all these people were. Mm-hmm. I can honestly say there wasn't a single person who was terrified of dying. They didn't have that. They didn't have that fear of judgment or hell or anything. And they were people from all different perspectives. And it was just, you know, for the most part, it's time and it's okay. It was quite something to see over and over again.
That must have been a profound experience.
It was. And sometimes incredibly sad. One woman I went to visit, her daughter had pretty much put her in a home and sold her house off, took everything and went back to another state. And this woman's here by herself. And I was literally sitting next to her watching the news and she died right there.
Oh, wow.
And that's humanism.
I think one of the biggest fears is that people don't want to be alone when they're passing and just physically being there is so important. Yeah.
No, it's been a wonderful experience for me. And even though in addition to my church, that Disciples of Christ Church I mentioned where I did my internship, we have a Sunday school there. And I go there before I go to our church. And it's about 14 people, and half of them are atheists or agnostics, and half are very progressive Christians. And, you know, the guys who go there, a lot of them are in their late 20s, early 30s, engineers out at the base or computer scientists or something. And they're guys that I hang out with because we do like board gaming and stuff. They're my friends. And that's how I found out about this. So we go to this Sunday school where atheists and Christians amicably get together every week and discuss moral and ethical issues or whatever the topic is of the day. And they've been very interested in finding out what an atheist really is.
Yeah.
Because they have all these weird misconceptions. And like I said earlier in the program, to me, an atheist is a person who has no belief in God. It doesn't mean I know there is no God. And I like to use Bigfoot as an example. I have no belief in Bigfoot. There might be a giant hairy hominid living in the Northwest that we have not captured yet after all these years. It's extremely unlikely, but it's an interesting concept. I have no belief in Bigfoot. That doesn't mean I know there is no Bigfoot.
Right.
There right. might be. I just have not seen compelling evidence.
Yeah.
And that's all it is to me to be an atheist. People love to argue that, no, an atheist knows there isn't a God.
Yeah.
Well, fine. If that's how you want to define it, I won't argue with you. But to me, my life is not based on a belief in God. And that's what an atheist is. And I don't claim to know things I can't possibly know.
Right. Yeah. It's an epistemological humility. Like,
yes.
What I can and cannot know, for sure. Yeah. And I do hate the arguments over definitions. I appreciate mm-hmm. when someone tells me this is what it means to me. It's like, great. Okay. Now I understand. Yeah, so yeah. I wouldn't think to argue back. Doug, before we wrap up, is there a topic or a question that I haven't asked well enough that you wanted to get out?
I can't really think of anything. I will mention, because you had talked to me prior to the show, that our church does have a backlog of sermons, although it hasn't been updated much since COVID hit. Our poor little church has suffered a lot from COVID.
We've lost wow.
people.
Okay.
People argue about whether we should even meet in person or not. People get their feelings hurt. It's been a very rough few years.
Yeah.
But if you or your listeners are curious what an atheist minister's sermons sound like, you can find them scattered amongst all the other sermons too, because many people speak at our church. I didn't speak every Sunday. And you can scroll back and find some. I did put my most recent one on there just in case someone was interested, and that'll be in your notes, I guess, afterwards.
Yeah.
Other than that, all I can say is I've been extremely happy not having to believe in God, mm-hmm. not having to worry about saving other people. I guess that's a good final concluding point. Relationships when I was a Christian were either with believers, and then you could be friends and get close, or they were targets that had to be evangelized because they're going to hell. And so everything is calculated. You're looking for those openings to share the gospel, to be a good testimony, to live your life in a way that exhibits Christ so that they might ask you. And everything is so strained and artificial, and you're always looking for those chances to insert some Bible verse or something Jesus said or something that might lead them to Christ. And being freed from A, people going to hell, and B, mm-hmm. my responsibility to save them and witness them.
Yes.
That was just insanely liberating. I'm sure many of your listeners get that. But life just became so much more pleasant. And friendships just became friendships. Mm-hmm. It's just someone you're friends with. You don't have to believe the same thing. And you don't have to change them. That was just wonderful. That's humanism too.
Yes, absolutely. And I love how you say it. It's liberating. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I still have a lot of interest in religious topics. I still read books by progressive Christians, mainly because I'm still waiting for someone to come up with something that I find compelling in any way, which while I've seen some very interesting new definitions of God, God is a process, God is not omnipotent or doesn't know the future and all these things, it really comes back to these are still people coming up with theories to describe something they can't describe. And while that is certainly apparently meaningful to them, I'm still where I've been for years. If it makes you a better person, okay. But I don't find your arguments compelling. So I guess I'm still an atheist.
Yes. Well, that's a great place to stop then. Doug, I really appreciate you being on the podcast and sharing your story with us.
Well, I appreciate all the work you're doing, and your podcast is great, and all the work you're doing to help people who are deconverting. Keep it up.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for having me.
Final thoughts on the episode. Doug's story is fascinating on a number of levels. As you could hear in his voice as he was describing the experience of truly and honestly believing he was going to die the next day and coming to grips with that, that reality is one that, as I mentioned in the conversation, that most of us will never experience. The old trope of the evangelical is that there are no atheists in foxholes, and Doug is the obvious exception to that rule. And it's quite comical that he actually quotes the Klingons to say, "It is a good day to die." In other words, in such an extreme experience, none of us really knows what we would do and what would get us through that. How would we survive from a mental health point of view, from a psychological point of view? But the point is that it is entirely possible to not reach out to the mysterious and the unknown and to be able to accept the reality around you and live through something as difficult as the threat to one's own life in that context. The obvious other thing that is really interesting is that Doug found an outlet for his desire to be a minister, that after the Air Force, he was able to come back and discovered the Unitarian Universalist Church, one that accepted him as an atheist and even was doing a book review of Christopher Hitchens, and found that outlet in order to connect with other people and to give back to his community. I will be honest and say that I don't know a lot about the Unitarian Universalist Church. I think there's a fairly wide spectrum of experiences there, but if you find one that allows for that space for you to be a non-believer and still have that community, it might be an option for you. Doug is retired from the ministry at this point, but he continues to help out and occasionally speak at, and you can find his recorded secular messages at tullahomauu.org, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tullahoma. I'm probably pronouncing that city name wrong, forgive me. There's also a book on Amazon called Doonesbury.com's The Sandbox, Dispatches from Troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. It includes a number of short stories, several of which Doug wrote, and it includes his story of being an atheist in a foxhole. I will have links in the show notes for all of those things. I want to thank Doug for being on the podcast and for telling his story. I really appreciate when people are vulnerable, and Doug absolutely did that, showed us how fearful and dangerous that moment in time was, and yet he did not need to call out to a deity in order to survive that. Thank you, Doug, so much for telling your story. The Secular Grace Thought of the Week is about service. And even when I say that word, I know how triggering that can be, how much that sounds like evangelicalism. And yet, as I've said before, much of what the church provides is secular in nature. It is the platform for community. It is the platform for people to use their hobbies and interests and, dare I say, talents to express themselves in a way that benefits that community. And that service is both useful to the community and to the person serving. Doug is an obvious exemplar of this, both through the military service, but also as a Unitarian Universalist minister, speaking and being at the bedside of people on their deathbed is an astonishingly intimate and powerful act of service. And what I do not want us to lose sight of is the human element of service, that when we give our time to other people, when we support another human being in their time of need, what a powerful impact that has. And note that I am not saying anything spiritual here, anything transcendent. I'm saying just human being to human being, it can change lives in a very real and practical way. The thing that I have been obsessed with over the years of doing this podcast is how can we keep the secular aspects of church and still connect with each other, still have community, still serve one another, still have an opportunity to use our interests, hobbies, talents, without having a set of beliefs that we need to sign off on that cannot be validated. I still don't have the answers for this, but I want us as a community to continue to find ways to do that. The Deconversion Anonymous Facebook group is the first start of this. People have done book clubs, hangouts on various topics. I think there's a group about to start on unequally yoked relationships. We have the ongoing Tuesday evening led by Arlene, the community manager. These are opportunities for people to serve. So if you have a topic that you would like to gather a group together and have a discussion about, come talk to Arlene or me, and we'll see if we can make that happen. As I've been saying, I am still looking for someone to manage the YouTube channel for The Graceful Atheist, which is simply just doing an audio wave over the graphic for the episode and publishing it. That's really all I need. If you're interested in doing that, that would be absolutely amazing. I'm still looking for a social media manager who could really run with the social media presence for the Graceful Atheist podcast and just expand it beyond what I am capable of doing. I do want to note here that Arlene has definitely helped out there quite a bit. So thank you, Arlene. I'm just looking to find ways that people can participate. And if you have some interest that would be beneficial to the community or the podcast, and I haven't mentioned it, reach out to me anyway, and let's see what we all can do together. The best way to reach me is via email at gracefulatheist@gmail.com. I have some really amazing interviews already conducted. We're going to have Tom Christofferson, who wrote Tempted to Believe. This is so timely. It is about a positive skepticism, a way of viewing the world that requires evidence, but doesn't lose the awe and wonder of the cosmos. It is fantastic. I'm really excited to share that with you. We also have Julia coming up, and Julia is a doctor who actually gave up her career in medicine to participate in a charismatic healing ministry and her deconstruction. And it's just an amazing story, and I can't wait for you to hear that also. Until then, my name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. Time for the footnotes. The beat is called Waves from Makai Beats. Links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can promote it on your social media. You can subscribe to it in your favorite podcast application, and you can rate and review it on podchaser.com. You can also support the podcast by clicking on the affiliate links for books on gracefulatheist.com. If you have podcast production experience and you would like to participate with the podcast, please get in touch with me. Have you gone through a faith transition, and do you need to tell your story? Reach out. If you are a creator or work in the deconstruction, deconversion, or secular humanism spaces and would like to be on the podcast, just ask. If you'd like to financially support the podcast, there's links in the show notes. To find me, you can Google Graceful Atheist, you can Google deconversion, you can Google secular grace, you can send me an email, gracefulatheist@gmail.com, or you can check out the website, gracefulatheist.com. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. This has been the Graceful Atheist Podcast.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.